Welcome to the Crowder Century Podcast. This is episode one for fall of 2016. I'm Chris Franklin.
I'm Chris Smith.
And I'm Megan Murphy.
So before we start and dig into our content today, we do want to give an explicit content warning. Some of the discussions we're going to have are graphic in nature. So if you have young ears, go ahead and tune them out while we give you some campus updates.
The U.S. Department of Education has issued a grant in total of $421,200 for the 2016-2017 academic year and for the next 5 years. Being refunded gives migrant students a chance to explore possibilities for their education. Camp has served over 500 students. Missouri State University and Crowder are working together to offer bachelor degrees for students who wish to stay at Crowder for the 4 years. The degrees offered are business, nursing, agriculture, and education. Crowder was named one of the best colleges to work for in 2016, making this the third consecutive year that it's won. Crowder was ranked as one of 4 institutions on its honor roll.
Constitution Day is on Monday, September 19th. Crowder College debate team will be presenting a forum titled "Re-examining the Constitution, Does My Vote Count?" from 12:30 to 1:45 p.m. in the Wright Conference Center. Crowder Campus Life, along with the Social Sciences Division, will be hosting a candidate forum on October 4th from 12:30 to 1:45 in the Wright Conference Room. There will be an informational meeting on Monday, September 19th, or Tuesday, September 20th, for the England, Wales, and Ireland tour next March. The meetings will be at 2 p.m. both days and will be held in the Fireside Room in the Student Center.
In sports news, Campus Life will be sponsoring a tailgate party for the Rough Riders soccer team on Tuesday, September 20th. They will be serving hot dogs, chips, and drinks for everyone from 4 to 5 p.m. Baseball scrimmages are underway. Softball scrimmages start September 21st. Basketball scrimmages begin October 9th. And the Rough Riders Softball and Baseball Alumni Weekend is October 14th to 15th. Former players are invited to attend various events. For more information, contact the athletic department at athletics@crowder.edu.
The weather through the remainder of September will be warm and slowly dropping in temperature from the lower 90s to possibly as low as the upper 50s. There's a good chance of rain from the 28th through the 30th.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Choices Medical Clinic. They offer confidential sexual health services for men and women from licensed medical professionals. To make an appointment, call their Joplin office at 417-624-8030 or visit them on the Crowder Neosho campus on Wednesdays at their mobile medical unit.
One more reminder that the following content is graphic in nature and is intended for mature audiences only.
Okay, so the first thing we're going to talk about is sexual assault on college campuses. And we want to talk about it in relation to the Brock Turner Stanford case. So before we get into the discussion, we'll start with the facts. The facts are, in a brief summary, as follows. On January 18th, 2015, Brock Turner was found raping a half-naked woman outside a fraternity house around 1 a.m. On February 2nd, 2015, Brock Turner pled not guilty to a total of 5 felony charges. These charges were attempted rape, rape of an unconscious person, sexual penetration of an intoxicated woman, and sexual penetration of an unconscious woman. Turner claimed that they were intending to hook up at a party and that no sexual penetration took place. October 6, 2015, Turner again pled not guilty, and 2 of the 5 felony charges were dropped. The dropped charges were rape of an intoxicated person and rape of an unconscious person. On March 30th of 2016, Brock Turner was found guilty of rape, with a possibility of 10 years behind bars. June 2nd, 2016, Turner was sentenced to only 6 months of jail and 3 years of probation by Judge Aaron Persky. As usual in cases of rape, Turner will also be required to register as a sex offender for the remainder of his life. Persky justified a lenient sentencing by saying, "I think he will not be a danger to others, and that a harsh sentencing would have a, quote, severe impact on him," according to an interview with CNN. While all of this was going on, Stanford University had its own investigation conducted. When they identified the victim, who is still unnamed, they reached out to her and her family and banned Brock Turner from setting foot on campus. College career. They also say that among college women, 9 in 10 victims of rape and sexual assault knew their offender. So while in the case of Brock Turner and the unnamed victim, they allegedly did not know each other prior to this, most people do, you know, and today we really want to talk about sexual assault on the broader scale in college, not just about this. So it is important that we have this statistic talking about the fact that most women did know their offender. So we're just going to open this up and have a discussion about it real quick.
What goes on in the mind of someone who is going to do that, especially someone you know? You know, that's just messed up. A friend or a, you know, family member.
Yeah, well, and I think the issue is that they do have some, there are serious psychological issues. And I think part of that, you know, when we talk about mental health, usually in relation to gun control, but I think there's a serious mental health issue that's not being addressed. We talk about it in terms of gun control, but I think the real issue is we have people getting raped and we're not talking about that. We're blaming the victim for being promiscuous. We're blaming her for being drunk, but we're not actually talking about, well, what is wrong in the mind of this rapist? We're more, and another thing is that we're more focused on punishing them rather than maybe rehabilitating them. And maybe in the process of rehabilitating them, we figure out what traits they have, what these common traits are, and we figure out how we prevent this, how we teach this. And one of the things, Chris, you had brought up was sex ed in middle school and in high school. And I think we all went through that to some degree in middle school and even in high school, and the way it's being taught. So what do you think we do? How do you think we change the way we talk about sex ed in those classes?
Instead of talking about just like the basic things, you know, you talk also about consent and teaching them that, you know, no means no. It's not just, you know, well, I'm horny, so I just, both people have to say yes, not just one of the two.
Right, and I think the problem with sex ed is they focus too much on STDs, STIs. They focus on using condoms, but I don't really think that the person you're raping cares about whether you're wearing a condom or not. I think they're more focused on the fact that you just violated that's such a breach of trust and such a sacred thing, you know, and I think maybe part of it is the fact that we don't teach sex ed properly in schools, but I think a lot of it is the fact that there's so much promiscuity on the news, on the media. I mean, you see Beyonce dancing half naked on the Super Bowl, well, and then all of a sudden you've got all these guys that think, well, that's sexy, and girls want to be her. Well, I mean, what message are we sending? Megan, as a female on campus, I mean, I know Crowder, we have a pretty good track record. It's been quite a few years since we've had a sexual assault report on campus. How do you feel in relation to being on Crowder, but also about this whole issue?
Well, I think that, I mean, I haven't had much experience with Crowder and being in situations where that's a possibility. But I think that, like you said, the media has a big role in, portraying, you know, promiscuous activity is the norm, especially for college. You know, there's that stereotype of college parties and alcohol and all that stuff. There's
So who do you think is to blame? I mean, if we look at all the people, all the institutions we've named, who would you say is the worst offender or the worst perpetuator?
I would say society in general. There's a lot of, we don't talk about, you know, the rapist, we don't tell rapists not to rape as much as we tell girls and women not to dress promiscuously or, you know, wash their drink. And I think that maybe if we assume that you should know not to rape someone or slip something in their drink, but, you know, like you said, it's a mental health issue and they may not understand that's not okay, that's not something you do.
Right, and I don't want to make it clear, I'm not saying that every rapist is mentally impaired or mentally debilitated. I think some people are just creeps.
Yeah.
And looking at this whole case, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say Brock Turner's a creep.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't really show any traits of a psychopath, of, you know, generally, you know, you see, like, especially with murder cases, they talk about traits of a serial killer. Well, I don't really know that he exhibits traits of somebody who is so psychologically damaged as much as he is just a, I think he's just a punk kid looking to take advantage of somebody to get some action. And
it could be like the way he grew up, you know, he could have been a little
entitled.
Yeah, entitled, and think that.
Well, and I definitely think he was entitled, and I think parenting definitely was one of the biggest issues. In fact, I have a letter from, or an excerpt from a letter that Brock Turner's father wrote, and in it he is quoted as saying, "That's a steep price to pay for 20 minutes of action out of his 20-plus years of life." And he also says, and this really ticks me off right here, he says, "Brock always enjoyed certain types of food and is a very good cook himself. I was always excited to buy him a big ribeye steak to grill or to get his favorite snack for him. Now he barely consumes any food and eats only to exist." Well, whoop-de-frickin'-do. Yeah. I'm sorry, but I don't care that this little punk kid... I mean, I'm a guy. Chris is a guy. We understand urges. I mean, sex is part of human nature. It is human nature to procreate, but...
Let's get a permission, you know.
Exactly. We all have to. It's part of maturity. If we're gonna accept maturity enough to go on and be in control of our education and be in control of the direction our lives take, then don't you think that same logic of being in control of the direction your life takes applies just as much to what you go to school for and where you go to school as it does to, am I going to rape somebody? Am I going to be a decent human being? And if you think that, then why does it matter? What he liked to do? I'm glad that, you know, I'm glad he was a great swimmer. That's awesome. Cool. Michael Phelps is a great swimmer. But, you know, he doesn't go around raping people. He actually has a very positive message, and we've seen a lot of that come out since the Olympics just a few weeks ago. So I don't understand why what he likes to do or what he's good at. I don't see why that matters, because it certainly didn't matter. You know, he didn't ask those questions of his victim. He certainly didn't get to know her in any way other than sexual intercourse. So I really don't care that he likes to cook. I don't care that he's a good cook. In fact, if he cooked something for me right now, I probably wouldn't eat it. And that's coming from somebody who really likes food. I'd probably spit it right in his face. But I think, you know, we did say that a lot of it is his upbringing. And for a father who knows that his son raped this kid, I mean... Come on, I don't believe that his father, honestly, for a minute, doubts this girl's story. I think at this point, everybody knows he raped her. There wasn't a lot of contest on that. So,
and what about her likes and interests? You know, she's not going to be able to feel the same way about things. And it wasn't her fault that any of this happened. It was his fault.
Right.
And he is getting what he deserved, maybe a little bit less than what.
No, he got a lot less than what he deserved, because he got a 6-month sentencing, and he's been out. He got out on 3 months for good behavior, which I don't know. I think there's something sketchy going on there. I think just as we saw a judge who gave him a lenient sentence because it would, quote, hurt him, you know, it would be damaging to him. I think we've seen something else going on. Clearly, that alone proves that the justice system didn't do this poor girl any justice. So can we really expect that he was really good in prison, or was he secluded and his daddy's money bought his way out of it? And I want to read this quote to you from the victim. She asked the judge that she be allowed to address Brock directly for most of this, and I want to read this, and just a content warning, this is very real stuff. This is a girl writing about getting raped. So this is not for the casual listener. So I'm just going to go right into it. She says, "I was not ready to tell my boyfriend or parents that actually I may have been raped behind a dumpster, but I don't know by who or when or how. If I told them, I would see the fear on their faces and mine would multiply by tenfold. So instead, I pretended the whole thing wasn't real. I tried to push it out of my mind, but it was so heavy, I didn't talk. I didn't eat. I didn't sleep. I didn't interact with anyone. After work, I would drive to a secluded place and scream. I didn't talk. I didn't eat. I didn't sleep. I didn't interact with anyone. And I became isolated from the ones I loved most. Lastly, you said, I want to show people that one night of drinking can ruin a life. At this point, she's addressing some of the points that Brock Turner had brought up when he was speaking, and he had talked about how one night of drinking can ruin a life. So she says, lastly, I want to show people that one night of drinking can ruin a life. A life, one life, yours. You forgot about mine. Let me rephrase for you. I want to show people that one night of drinking can ruin two lives, you and me. You are the cause, I am the effect. You've dragged me through this hell with you, dipped me back into that night again and again. You knocked down both our towers. I collapsed at the same time you did. If you think I was spared, came out unscathed, that today I ride off into sunset while you suffer the greatest blow, you're mistaken. Nobody wins. We've all been devastated. We've all been trying to find some meaning in all of this suffering. Your damage was concrete, stripped of titles, degrees, enrollment. My damage was internal, unseen. I carry it with me. You took away my worth, my privacy, my energy, my time, my safety, my intimacy, my confidence, my own voice, until today. The biggest thing that really stands out to me is in the beginning, that first quote where she talks about not being able to talk to anybody, because from the same source we cited earlier, they say that roughly 5% of rape or attempted rape victims even say anything, and that is usually just to friends, never to family, never to school or law enforcement officials. 5%, that is 1 in 20 rapes that somebody even says anything about. That means 19 in 20 rapes on college campuses go completely undetected. The only person that knows about them are the rapist and the victim. And clearly we see a girl who has been damaged by this beyond all repair, and she's spoken out about it. She's vented. She's spoken. There are other people who live with an internal monologue that would probably read just the same or maybe even more scathing, but it only ever plays in their head. So we need to find a solution. There needs to be a solution, because if this keeps going on, it's going to drive women away from college campuses. It's going to create an inequality in education that brings us back to the dark ages, because people are too afraid to set foot on campus. And none of us here want to see that. So for the lack of time, we do have to move on to the next subject. But if you have any comments, questions that you'd like us to answer in the next podcast, go ahead and get on our Facebook page, the Crowder Century News Network. Get on there, post some questions, and we'll be glad to answer them for you. We may even do a special segment outside of the podcast where we do answer these questions. So please get that to us, and we'll take care of it for you. So the next topic we want to discuss today is Senate Bill 11, which was signed by Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, in the summer of 2015. It allows individuals with a concealed handgun license to carry a handgun while on Texas public university campuses as long as the weapon's not visible. The requirements for this are that license holders must be 21 years old, with the exception for active duty military and police. They must meet federal qualifications to own a gun, and they have to receive training from an instructor certified by the Texas Department of Public Safety. So basically, you can conceal and carry on Texas public campuses. You can't open carry, but you can conceal and carry. There's no problem with that. They can't do anything about it. But the big counter protest has come from... Why don't you go ahead, Megan, and tell us a little bit about that counter protest?
Well, they're calling it Cox Not Glocks because it is illegal to carry a dildo around in public in Texas. So I guess their kind of argument is that if it's inappropriate to carry a dildo on campus, it should be illegal to carry a gun on campus. My thing is, first of all, it is actually legal to carry a dildo on campus, and it's inappropriate, and the guns won't be seen. The whole point is they have to be concealed.
Well, yeah, and so from my understanding is the legislation concerning adult toys, as we, you know, for a broader term, my understanding is that it is illegal to have them in the presence of children. So to say it's illegal on a college campus is, I mean, I guess I could see that because you never know when there are going to be children on the campus. Yeah. So I can see that. I can see their argument there. But, and one of the, okay, Rosie Zander, she's a 20-year-old history student at the school. She says, she's quoted as saying, "We have crazy laws here, but this is by far the craziest. That you can't bring a dildo onto campus legally, but you can bring your gun. We're just trying to fight absurdity with absurdity." That's end quote. So, but my issue is so we're fighting, or they are fighting somebody's constitutional right and the state government acknowledging said right by breaking a law pertaining to something that has no constitutional protection whatsoever. The founding fathers wrote no constitutional protection for sex toys. It didn't happen. So I guess I don't understand the logic. It's not even fighting absurdity with absurdity. It's fighting constitutionality with absurdity. So I think you're definitely right. I think the only reason we're seeing this, okay, I think the only reason we're seeing it called Cox Not Glocks, I think the only reason they're using sex toys is because they want shock value. The school has some 50,000 students on the campus, and they've been reported generously reported as having maybe a couple hundred students. So this is not even a whole percent of, like, not even a whole percent. It's a fraction of a percent of the students on this campus. So I think they realize they don't have the numbers on their side. They don't have any kind of majority as far as public opinion is concerned, at least in this demographic. They are going for shock value. That's the only way they're getting their message out there. Otherwise, I mean, they're insignificant. And the only reason we're talking about it today is not because, oh, these guys are relevant. They're still a cultural relevance. I haven't seen it on the news lately at all in the past few weeks. The only reason we're talking about it is because we want to talk about campus carry on Crowder, and we want to have that discussion about whether that's something we should look at, whether that's something the state of Missouri should look at. We're doing it to bring it back to Crowder. So we're not even talking about it for any other reason than I don't know, to... I'm laughing at them. I think this is ridiculous. Chris, what do you think as far as all of this on Texas? Well, and then we'll move into the...
Well, at first, with the clocks on clocks, I was supporting it because I thought it meant open carry, and I don't want a bunch of, you know... Some people, you know, don't really need to be carrying a gun on campus. Statistically, you know, someone, it could be a student that is a shooter. But the fact that it is... not open carry, and it's in seal and carry, you know, they have to get a license for it, they have to take, you know, classes for it, they have to do all these things for it. So, I mean, they know what they're doing, and, you know, and they don't have to hide it. It's not, you don't just see a bunch of people walking around with guns.
Not to mention the fact that it's, I mean, there is a fairly lengthy process to even get a handgun, but then the double protection is that it's conceal and carry, so not only do you have to be a citizen in relatively good standing... you know, meaning no felonies. You have to be a citizen in relatively good standing to even get the firearm. But the double protection here is that you have to have the conceal and carry license. You can't just say, well, it's legal now, and then go conceal carry. Like, you still have to be trained to conceal and carry. If you are caught on campus with a weapon concealed and you don't have a conceal and carry, you can't produce that documentation, then you are still breaking the law. You're still breaking Texas law. So it's not even saying, hey, go, you know, it's not even turning Texas necessarily into the Old West where anybody can strap on a firearm and walk around. You still have to conceal and carry. You still have to be tactful about it. And you still have to be legally registered. I mean, you still have to be legally, you know, trained according to standards set forth by the state of Texas. And you still have to adhere to laws set forth by the state of Texas and the federal government.
So it's not like any idiot can go out and buy a firearm and just walk around with it. And I think that is the distinction that is being so carefully left out of these narratives. They're carefully leaving the fact that you still have legal protections against just anybody carrying guns around, and I think that's part of the issue here. But again, we want to talk about this so that we can get into the discussion about what would something that, like this look like in the state of Missouri, specifically on Crowder campus. So, Megan, what do you think? What do you think about something like this being enacted on Crowder campus? How do you feel about that?
Well, I think it'd actually probably be a good idea just to have, you know, because campus shootings are a major issue these days, to have people that are trained and registered and know how to use. That's the most important part for me, is that they have training and are educated on how to use the gun, so you don't just have a bunch of people wandering around.
Right. It keeps things civil. It keeps everybody in the people have guns that are informed about them and trained. And another thing, I just thought of this, but you know, we haven't had any school shootings. We've been lucky. We haven't had shootings like that. But it was just a few semesters ago that we were put on lockdown because some kid threatened, like, he made a bomb threat. He didn't even have the bomb. He wasn't serious about it. Like there was no serious intent. There was no premeditation. The kid just didn't want to take a test, and so he made a comment about having a bomb. And so, of course, that's as close as we've gotten. But that only proves that Crowder, just because we're at Southwest Missouri Community College, we're not immune to that. And I think, you know, if you have these public universities where it's very well known that there are people that may or may not have guns, and the fact that they're concealed, you don't know which guy has a gun. You don't know which girl has a gun. So anybody could have a gun on that campus. So I think that in and of itself does far more to protect these schools from public shootings than any gun-free zone ever has and ever will. And I think this is the alternative to gun-free zones that moderate liberals, that reasonable liberals, not the raging, we want to take your guns away and all of them right now. Like, moderate liberals, I think this is the solution they're looking for. And I hope that we can look at this and look at this as time goes by and realize that, hey, you know, in a year or 2 years from now, we realize, hey, we haven't heard any more about this. Well, that's because there haven't been any shootings. I mean, and Texas isn't the first state to have legislation similar to this, and we haven't heard anything about that. The uproar now is because there has been such an increasingly hostile narrative towards guns and gun ownership. So let me actually, on the Crowder website, if you go to the Crowder College website, here's what it currently states. This is about the concealed weapons policy. It says concealed weapons policy. From the wording of this, this looks to be their policy about weapons, regardless of the concealment or the visibility. It says possession and or the use of firearms or dangerous weapons are strictly prohibited on campus or at any official college function and may violate state law and are punishable by the college. This policy applies to students, faculty, staff, and visitors. All Crowder College campuses, such as Webb City, Nevada, Neosho, Cassville, Anderson, and Monette, are included in this policy. So basically, the Crowder policy is no guns. No guns, no anything bigger than a pocket knife and a toothpick, basically. So that is it right now. But I do want to turn our attention really quickly to the provision that it may violate state law. In fact, just in the past couple days, we've heard about the fact that the Missouri state legislature overturned the veto that our governor applied to the bill allowing for constitutional carry in Missouri. So now that that veto has been overturned, that means at a certain point in time, I think it's January 1st of this next year, I believe, is the official date that this all goes into effect. But this means that pretty much any law-abiding citizen in the state of Missouri, if you're legal to own a gun, if you can pass a federal firearms check, all of this, if you can go into a gun store and legally purchase a gun and go through that process, you are now allowed to open or conceal and carry without the conceal and carry permit. Now, this doesn't mean, you know, if you go into Arkansas or you go to Oklahoma and you don't have a conceal and carry permit, you are still violating their laws. But within Missouri, that after, I believe, the first of the year, that won't be an issue anymore. So I guess the question is, what does that do to Crowder's ability to enforce that on our campuses? So, and what are you okay with it doing to Crowder campuses? So, Chris, what do you think about this in light of those new developments?
Honestly, so my views are across the board when it comes to guns.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm not just strictly conservative or strictly liberal on
right.
that. But it kind of scares me that anyone can get a gun. Yeah, you know, like we said earlier, we do have a mental health issue. So someone who hasn't had any legal problems yet could get that gun and legally be walking around with.
Right, and that's fair. And you bring up mental health, and the problem with bringing mental health into the gun equation, which we see a lot. You know, we've already discussed that. We see mental health brought up, and I think the problem with tacking mental health as a stipulation onto gun ownership is, unless we absolutely definitively define what constitutes as mental health, then that eventually is going to be a slippery slope. And eventually, if you've ever had an anxiety attack or if you've ever had depression, then you know, they could use that and make it to where you're no longer allowed to own a firearm. So I do agree that, you know, we do need, I don't know that necessarily mental health as a stipulation for gun ownership
should
be necessary.
That,
right. And, but I'm saying I don't necessarily think that tacking mental health as a stipulation to gun ownership is the solution. I think the solution is, again, like we said about sexual assault, the solution starts with teaching kids about mental health. Not making it something you only learn about if you're a psychology or sociology major, not something you may learn about in a semester-long class in high school, but actually teaching kids about mental health, teaching kids about the resources they have to combat depression, anxiety, you know, and then there are mental health issues like schizophrenia. There are things that the only thing we can do is prevent, and to an extent, I'm open to a discussion about maybe that being at least a red flag for somebody purchasing a gun. But I think again, it all comes back to making it less about stipulations for being a stipulation for ownership and more about just educating people.
What if we did the same thing with, you know, guns? We educate them with guns at such a young age instead of okay, here one day, here's a gun.
And I'm okay with that, but not all of us, or not all of America is on board with that necessarily. I mean, there are people that will tell you their agenda is take guns away entirely. There are people in the liberal media and in the liberal political spectrum that they'll point you to Great Britain, they'll point you to Australia, and you know, I don't think those are great examples. I think those are poor examples. But the point is those people are not pointing you at gun-free societies because they want you to think about common sense gun legislation. They're pointing you at those societies because they're saying this is what we want. That's the model society. So I'm open to that. I think that's fantastic. But the problem is you've got to get everybody or at least a great majority on board with that, because if that would be something that has to be regulated and brought about through the Department of Education, which is a government entity, and the only way that's going to happen is if we get enough people in the government that are okay with that. And to do that, you have to get public opinion to shift in favor of it. So I would be okay with it, but again, I don't see that happening. I see that about as likely as a complete and total gun confiscation. I just don't see either of those happening.
Yeah. I don't think you get every single person. Like, Great Britain is a lot smaller than America. So there's a mm-hmm. lot, there were less guns to, I don't even know what they did with the guns in Great Britain, but there's a lot less people, there's a lot,
Well, and guns aren't so ingrained in their culture.
Yeah, it's not a cultural
Great,
thing for
Great
them.
Britain wasn't a country, they were around long before guns, you know, yeah. We were a country that we, guns are ingrained in our culture because guns are the reason we exist, not as a colonial extension of Great Britain, but as an independent nation. So when you have something so deeply ingrained in a society, it's really hard. That's why there's so much resistance about it. So I don't think that's something we'll ever see happen. It would take a very drastic thing, I think, to get enough momentum behind gun confiscation for it to actually happen. So I don't know. I think at Crowder it would be a great thing to allow students to conceal and carry as long as they have their conceal and carry. In fact, now that we, in light of those new laws, I would almost say that I think it would be a fantastic show of good faith and a fantastic way to combat any kind of shooting on campuses in Missouri to say, listen, you don't need your conceal and carry anymore, but, you know, and to either, as a school policy, to require a conceal and carry in order to carry on a campus, if that's permissible, or at the very least to say, hey, listen, we can't make you have a conceal and carry, but we're going to offer it as a class. We're going to offer it as a class here. We're going to get local law enforcement to teach that class, and we're going to offer it to you. You can take it on campus. You can come in and do it. It's an 8-week course, whatever. You know, and then whereas, you know, a conceal and carry class is just a few hours, now you've turned it into a first 8-week and a second 8-week course. That's 8 weeks. So now you're not just talking about laws and regulations, but now you can take those kids out to the shooting range. We have just a couple, not very far from here. Now you can take these students out, get them on a shooting range, get them comfortable with guns, and you have so much more room and so much more time to really work with them and really hone these essential concepts. So I think there are many ways Crowder could do that. Again, if you have questions, comments, any kind of feedback, we will be happy to address it. Just get on Facebook, go to the Crowder Century News Network, give us a like while you're there, share this when we get it posted, and be sure to keep checking in, keep tuning in, and again, leave commentary, we will address it. We will, if we have to make special episodes for it, if we address it at the beginning of future podcasts, leave us commentary, leave us questions. We'll address it, and we hope you've enjoyed this, and we will talk to you next time.